FanDuel and the Phil Nason Show have partnered to bring you a 100% signing bonus up to $200 when you play fantasy sports at FanDuel. For your 100% signing bonus, please use the promo code PhillyFlash and win some cash with the Flash playing fantasy sports at FanDuel today.
The Phil Nason Show, is on in five, four, three, two, one.
Welcome to the Phil Nason Show. I'm happy to have you here. We'll be here for the entire hour, and it's NBA day around here. Matt Moore from CBS Sports will be here later on to answer your questions about the Atlanta Hawks, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and the Portland Trail Blazers. And after that, we'll be here to talk to Dave Deckard about the Portland Trail Blazers. But up first, the Memphis Grizzlies. They're having a great time in the preseason, getting ready for the real season, and joining me to talk all about that and more from MemphisFlyer.com. Kevin Leip is in the house. Kevin, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
I'm good, Phil. How are you?
I'm great, man. I got to send a big shout out real quick. We are now affiliated with People Radio in the Virgin Islands, the British Virgin Islands, and we want to send a big shout out to them. And if you get a chance, head on over to People Radio for great music, talk, and a lot more. Kevin, what's going on with the Grizzlies? What's new with them?
Honestly, not a whole lot. They haven't, since we last talked, they've only played two preseason games, one against the Hawks that they won, one against the Thunder that they lost. The Thunder game, none of the quote-unquote starters from last year played. So Conley, Allen, Prince, Gasol, and Randolph all sat out. So it's kind of hard to tell anything about the starting lineup from that. The Hawks game was pretty good. They played, I won't say full intensity, but it was both teams were trying to win. It was very competitive. Starters played a lot of minutes for the Grizzlies. Jordan Adams looked really good. The Thunder game I didn't get to watch because I was actually at a Pearl Jam concert. Plus, it wasn't on TV. But the game Saturday I was at, and Jordan Adams is really looking good.
They shouldn't have drafted him. That was just stupid, right? Wasn't that stupid? Everyone said how stupid it was to take Jordan Adams, except for you and me and everyone else who has any common sense about basketball.
But right.
He's played really well in the preseason. The question I have, though, about him, and the same with Stokes, though, is how many minutes are they going to get in the regular season? How do you see that so far?
Well, it's an interesting question. I mean, so they played the Hawks, like I said, pretty hard and played the starters pretty heavy minutes, and Stokes didn't get any time at all. Adams played quite a bit, but Stokes was on the bench. I really would like to see Stokes get a lot of minutes. I mean, I think that he really has potential to develop into a really good NBA player. I know there are kind of some size concerns and kind of wingspan concerns with him, but so far, he's able to kind of outwork that and play really well. You know, I wonder if that's a situation where maybe Kufus has to go for Stokes to get the minutes that he needs, because then you would be playing Luer and Stokes as your backup front court. Try saying backup front court without getting those words mixed up.
You're talking to a guy who mixes up his own name.
That's true. I've heard you do it. Yes, I mean, I think Adams is going to be pretty much guaranteed playing time. I don't think he'll start at least at the beginning of the season. He may not start all season this year, but he's going to get minutes. It's Stokes that I'm worried about kind of getting buried. The Grizzlies are not historically not very good at clearing up rotation time for rookies, and I just fear that Stokes is going to get trapped on the bench and kind of slow his development a little bit.
Those are good observations. I happen to agree with you. I like what you said about Kostas Koufos, and we have a big Greek audience. But you know what? He can play somewhere. Maybe that's what they need to do. Maybe that's the trade they need to make in order to get another three-point shooter.
Well, he's such a valuable asset. I mean, he's only getting paid $3 million this year, which is way under what he's worth. And when the salary cap goes up, he's going to be really, honestly, probably pretty overpriced. His offensive game is not quite as developed as you would like for a guy that's probably going to make as much money as he's going to make. And I say that as a guy who, you know, I love Kostas Koufos. I love the way he plays. I like him as a person. But I just think from an asset standpoint, like, he's a really good player on a really good contract. And hear me out on this. I think a good move for the Grizzlies would maybe be to trade him to Cleveland and try to get their first round pick back for next year.
You know, that's not a bad idea. They're looking for a rim protector, a rim defender, and he would be perfect. 20, exactly. 25 minutes a night. And if Vallejo goes down, boy, oh boy, that's not a bad idea. You should be a general manager, Kevin. I've always said that about you, though.
Yeah, I mean, I've applied for several president of basketball ops positions. I have not gotten one yet. But, you know, my time will come.
It's because you don't have gray hair.
Yet.
Yet. But still, I think that's not a bad idea, really, when you look at it. It would be just what Cleveland needs, and that first-round pick would be just what Memphis needs. And yeah, just in case, insurance against, you know, Gasol, heaven for God forbid, deciding to take his talent somewhere else.
Well, and I mean, the other thing is, you could, I don't know if Cleveland would do that straight up, you know, a pick for Kostas Koufos. They may do it straight up for, like, Kostas Koufos and Quincy Pondexter, because that's low salary. That's another low salary, kind of low risk guy who can be a rotation player for them if they need it. You know, they don't really need a lot of help at the wings, but, yeah, I don't know. I think there's some sort of a deal there that could kind of clear up the wing rotation, clear up the front court, and then you know, try to get that pick back or get a first round pick next year anyway.
That's not a bad idea. You know, we bring up the Thunder game. I talked about it yesterday with J.A. Sherman. I even wrote a blog post to go with the show where I don't think that the Thunder are going to adapt as well. Losing Kevin Durant for that amount of time, it's hard to lose a guy and replace a guy who averages 42 minutes and leads in almost every category on your team. I don't think they have two players on that team that can match, or two players off the bench that can match his output. What do you see when you see the Thunder? What do you see with that? Because I know it has implications for the Grizzlies as well.
Yeah, I mean, well, look, we don't know what's going to happen with Russell Westbrook, right? I mean, They could end up, if Durant misses more than 2 months, they could end up in the lottery. They could be, like, undefeated. We don't know what's going to happen when Russell Westbrook is pretty much unleashed. I think it was Pro Hoops History on Twitter. When Durant was not on the court and Westbrook was last year, he averaged, like, 0.83 shots a minute. And that is more, that's a higher shots per minute number than Wilt Chamberlain the year that he averaged 50 points a game. So Westbrook is going to be, unless he can kind of dial back his craziness, he's going to be a wild card. You know, I mean, we don't know what we're going to see from him. He could just be like, go supernova and carry the team and score 50 points a night. It could be terrible. I think it's really going to be interesting to watch him in a real game and see, you know, kind of how that goes. See what it's like for him without Durant for an extended period of time. I think that might be the most interesting story in the league right now.
I think you're right. And that's, I basically said the same thing and I got killed for it. Somebody actually said to me, well, they did okay against the Grizzlies. And I tried to point out to them, well, the Grizzlies didn't even start their starting five or even play their starting five. And it's a preseason, but you know, Russell Westbrook, he's my favorite player in the NBA because he's just so dynamic, and he can turn things around in a hurry. But he averaged
interesting to watch.
He was ranked 16th in point guards and point guard efficiency last season. He averaged 4 turnovers a game. You know, there's a good Russell and a bad Russell, and sometimes it doesn't work out. The other thing, too, is when Russell Westbrook was on the floor, 95% of the time, Kevin Durant was on there with him. And now he doesn't have that go-to guy. Who does he go to now besides Ibaka? He doesn't have an established go-to guy to bail him out. Now, they did some things against the Grizzlies with Steven Adams. But again, you know, they're not playing against Zebo and Marc Gasol. I mean, how does that work?
Yeah, I don't know. That's it. I mean, look, they have Kendrick Perkins. They'll be okay. that was a joke. I hate Kendrick Perkins.
I'm glad I had the microphone muted. I almost died here.
I think that's a real question for them. I think Reggie Jackson is going to have to step up. I mean, he's proven that he can be a scorer, that he can take on that role. You know, not to the Durant level, but he can do it. I think Ibaka running a little bit more inside out stuff with Ibaka kind of stretching out to the 3-point line could be really interesting for them. I think Adams, maybe if he establishes like a post scoring game, could be a really big asset for them. He makes a lot of opposing players mad already. And so for him to add that offensive capability would be really huge if he can do that. He scored a lot of points against the Grizzlies, but again, it was not against the starters, but still it was a lot of points. And, you know, I think they'll be okay. I'm not sure that they'll be as good as, obviously they're not going to be as good without Kevin Durant, but I think they'll probably still make the playoffs. And it's not like he's out for the year. We could have Durant back by January and then, you know, full speed ahead.
Right.
I wonder, you know, I don't think it's in their best interest to rush him back from this. So I think they should probably just kind of do what the Grizzlies did and just see where they can be when Durant comes back and then go from there. I mean, the Grizzlies last year when Gasol went down, they were basically just treading water until he got back. I think that's probably kind of similar to what the Thunder will be. Just make the playoffs. They know if they have Durant back in the playoffs, it doesn't matter if they're the 7 seed. You know what I mean? They can hang in there. The West Conference playoffs are so much about matchups that it really doesn't matter where they're seeded as long as they make it.
Those are good observations. I think they're going to probably – they won't win 50 games this season. And if they don't, they won't make the playoffs. I mean, the West is stacked, and that's the other thing that I was thinking about. But now with the Grizzlies, Michael Beasley off to China. That experiment lasted a total of, what, 2 weeks? What happened there, you think?
Yeah. Well, I think he just I don't think it was that big of a deal. I think he stayed out of that road trip with quote-unquote flu-like symptoms, probably because his agent – he knew his agent was talking to China. And then, you know, it's guaranteed money. He wasn't guaranteed to make the Grizzlies roster. He wasn't guaranteed a spot on any NBA roster. China's paying him money. He can go over there and play, and their season's over in March. And so an NBA team can pick him up for the playoffs if they want to. You know, I can't begrudge the guy for going and getting a guaranteed salary to play basketball when he wasn't guaranteed one here. I think the Grizzlies felt the same way. It was like, yeah, I mean, we're not – no hard feelings. Just, yeah, go do what you got to do. Go play in China, and that's cool.
Yeah, good luck to him, too. He'll dominate. If Stephen Marbury has a statue there, I'm sure Beasley will get one, too. I don't know what it's going to entail all, but still, good luck to him. That's all you can say. But I'll tell you, I really like Stokes and Adams, man. I think those were two good draft picks. But and I don't see how much PT they're going to get. And that's one of my dislikes from the week before, I think. This last week is the puzzlement there between Stokes and Adams. To me, they're playing good, but it's a dislike because I don't trust Dave Yeager.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't think anybody does. I don't think anybody who says they know what this regular season rotation is going to look like is full of it. I think... we could see Tayshaun Prince starting basketball games, and I think that honestly, you could probably make a case for it at this point because he's played pretty well. But everybody knows that that's probably not the Grizzlies' strength. But that doesn't mean that that's what's going to happen. I think it's pretty up in the air as to what this rotation is actually going to look like. I'm hoping that their next preseason game is against Flamengo from Brazil, so that won't be a true test, but. You know, they've got preseason games coming up against the Cavaliers and against the Heat, and those are going to be – that's tough competition if they're actually playing hard. So I think that maybe what happens in those two games could tell us a little bit who starts, how hard they play, that kind of thing. But if it's just a shut it down, it's a preseason game kind of thing, then we're not going to learn anything.
That's exactly right. We won't. it's really all going to boil down to the end of October. That's when we're going to learn. And it might even be into November, middle of November, early December, before we see a real rotation. And that's the thing about Dave Yeager. You don't really know what he's going to do. I think he's going to start Tony Allen, too.
It seems that way. I wouldn't count on it, but it does seem that way. I think Tony Allen's probably expecting to start. That's the thing with the rotation, though. Like, they have to get off to a good start this year. And so if they're kind of messing around and not putting their best players on the floor to play together as units, they're going to lose some games that they don't need to lose. I mean, if they're going to have the playoff seeding that they want to have and get home court advantage and make another run to the Western Conference Finals, they can't get off to a slow start again. They just can't. And so he's got to be really careful with his personnel groupings, because if he if he doesn't have the best players on the floor, that's not putting the Grizzlies in the best position to win, and they're going to lose games that they don't need to lose.
Well, I'll tell you what, the one thing, we only have about 30 seconds, is the pairing of Quincy Pondexter and Courtney Lee. They looked pretty good the other night. And starting them together, maybe that's an indicator. I think I saw that on your blog. I have to agree with that. Great stuff today, Kevin. We'll talk to you next week and more Grizzly news.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, that was Kevin Leip. You can find him over at MemphisFlyer.com/blog/BeyondTheArc. Coming up next, Matt Moore and I will talk Atlanta Hawks, maybe some Kevin Durant, and some Portland Trailblazers. And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
Hi, we're Rob Folkett, and you're listening to Phil Nason Show.
Riveting talk radio.
Everybody get up. People cannot get away from the internet.
Well,
now.
I think, and it probably comes from porn as well. You
yeah.
know what I mean? That's got to be a big, strong big thing. Strong
oh, that's thing. Gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Talk radio. Bend over, baby.
That was great.
FanDuel and the Phil Nason Show have partnered to bring you a 100% signing bonus up to $200 when you play fantasy sports at FanDuel. For your 100% signing bonus, please use the promo code PhillyFlash and win some cash with the Flash playing fantasy sports at FanDuel today.
Central Portugal's only English-speaking information station, this is Epics Radio. Listen online, www.epicsradio.com.
If you like baseball, you should be checking out baseballpodcasts.net. It's one of the best places you can go on the internet to listen to independent baseball talk shows 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on our radio player that can be heard around the world. So won't you tune in and give us a listen at baseballpodcast.net. You can also listen to the great Phil Nason Show here. See you there at baseballpodcast.net.
Brewtown Sports is your source for Brewers news and notes. Join Mr. Brewtown as he keeps you up to date on all the happenings of your Milwaukee Brewers and Major League Baseball. Follow the show on Facebook and Twitter, Brewtown Sports. Listen 24/7 at BrewtownSports.podomatic.com.
Hi, this is Phil Nason from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nason Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
And now,
shut the hell up.
Back to the Phil Nason Show.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. Kevin Durant is the subject of everybody, and why not? He's one of the best players in the game, and joining me to talk about that, the Hawks, and the Trailblazers, please welcome from CBSSports.com, Matt Moore is in the house. Matt, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing well, Phil. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I got killed yesterday because I had made a statement that I wasn't sure what the Thunder were going to do and how difficult it would be in the West without their MVP for over 20 games to hit the 50-game threshold that they probably would need to make the playoffs. And people were upset. What do you think is going to happen with the Thunder minus Kevin Durant?
You know, what's funny is there have been early projections are coming out. And we'll have to see kind of what the rest of them do when the statistical models come out. But a lot of them are indicating 45 to 48 wins for the Thunder. And I was really surprised. But it shows you kind of the impact that Durant had, and that not only just Durant, but like individual superstars and what they can do in this league. Do I think that they'll win more than 50? Yes, I do. I think that they will be able to coast along at least an above 500 mark until Durant gets back. And then when Durant gets back, part of it also, too, is they lost Westbrook last year. And whatever your feelings on Westbrook are, he's clearly a significantly above replacement player guy. And yet they surged without him, because a lot of the times, and this gets lost in the metrics and in the really base individual skill set analysis, which is these guys in the locker room will close ranks and rally. And that's a really powerful tool to be able to say, nobody thinks that we can win without KD. Everyone thinks that we are totally screwed, that we're not going to be able to function without him. He's our guy. He's our best player, but we are a really good team. And that kind of mindset can really drive you to some wins that you're not expecting. The other thing to remember is that Durant's missing time in the beginning of the season. And then the beginning of the season, a lot of crazy stuff happens. The Sixers won 3 games in the first 2 weeks last year. Like, that was crazy. And so there's an opportunity there for the Thunder to sneak up on a couple of teams that aren't necessarily ready and aren't as good as they will be in, say, February. So I think that they'll be fine. It'll be an interesting kind of experiment to see exactly what they can do with Russell Westbrook as the main guy.
Those are good thoughts. You know, Westbrook's my favorite player in the NBA. I love him. I call him third row because, if you remember, every fourth or fifth pass used to wind up in the third row. And he was reckless, but I love the way he plays. He's 100% every night. Kevin Leib said something in the first segment, Matt, about Russell Westbrook. He said that without Durant on the floor, he puts up as many shots per minute as Wilt Chamberlain did. Now, that's going to be interesting to see. My thing is, too, with Durant is that stress fracture in his foot. Now, I know things are different now, but I've had a stress fracture in my shin. It took a long time for it to heal. I'm kind of wondering how they're going to work with that and work around it, because you can't just mess with your MVP, right?
In terms of?
When he returns. When he returns, is he going to? How many minutes is he going to play per night?
Yeah, I think that's a tough one, and I think that entirely depends on whether he has surgery, how surgery goes, what the healing process is like. Because this injury in particular, the problem is if he doesn't have surgery and he hasn't had it yet, after I say this, he will obviously this morning. But if he doesn't have surgery, you know, there's a real risk of refracture because of blood flow issues. And so in that case, they would have to be really careful with him, and that would be a more of a long-term process. I think that they'll probably try and contain a little bit. One of the things that frustrated a lot of people last year was that they never really staggered Westbrook and Durant. They never had – like, they were always on the floor at the same time. That's why all those numbers for Westbrook are crazy. It's because he was almost never on the floor without KD. And so you got kind of a small sample effect there. I think that they'll probably be careful with him, but – there is a tendency to use guys longer minutes when they're younger, even after injury. And people are I saw yesterday the conversation has been started about, did the Thunder wear down Durant too much? And the reality is they may have, but if they did, then Greg Popovich wore down Tim Duncan. Duncan played unbelievable minutes early in his career. Everyone forgets this, but when you're younger, you can do that. You have to adjust for age and the cumulative effect of games. Part of it also is, look, Durant's going to want to play. He's going to want to, and there's got to be a level to which you have to trust the guy to know his body. So I think he'll probably wind up playing a bunch of games. He's been primarily healthy for most of his career. It's a concerning injury because it's the Jones fracture and a bunch of big men have had it. But I think with Durant's kind of approach and the way that he's been so durable, I have high hopes that essentially this won't be a question come March.
Those are all good thoughts. You know, we'll have to disagree on the wins, but we don't know. So we're all just kind of speculating, and that's a good thing, and that's what I enjoy. That's what I try to do. I try to take in everything and put it all together, and, well, the Thunder people weren't too pleased. Maybe not all of them, but most of them. So anyway, Atlanta Hawks. A listener wanted to know where you think the Hawks are going to fit in, because some guys have them 4th seed, others have them the 8th seed. Where do you see the Hawks fitting in this year?
I think I'm really intrigued by this Hawks team, and I was before, but now I'm even more so because of how are they going to respond to all the nonsense that went on over the summer? And it wasn't nonsense. It was a legitimate scandal and hurtful to a lot of people, but it was a nonsense in terms of it was something that the players shouldn't have had to deal with, and they did. All the stuff that went on with Danny Ferry and the ownership group, I want to know how that's going to affect the locker room chemistry. Sometimes these things can really infect a place, and everyone can just be like, I don't want to be here. Like, this is just a toxic environment. And that can cause major problems. If we remove the chemistry aspect of it, every time I look at it, I keep coming back to this team as the third best team in the East. I think Charlotte's right there. I think Miami's right there. But I think the Wizards are right there. But if you look at Atlanta, and they've got a 5-out shooting concept that they can go to at any point. And I did a post over the summer talking about how Horford has been – I noticed something in film, which is Horford legitimately was working on adding a 3. He's been ticking up slowly. And he's got the shooting stroke to where that's a good idea. That's not Chris Bosh trying to add that to his game late in his career. It's a natural kind of thing for Horford. You got Al Horford, who really is an all-star caliber. I believe he's a top 10 caliber player in the league. You got Paul Millsap, who's an all-star, an unbelievable combo forward who's able to do just about everything on the floor. Jeff Teague, who is criminally underrated really on both ends of the floor. He runs a smooth pick and roll. He's got great defensive principles. He gets to the rim really easily, and he's got a solid outside shot. And then you got Kyle Korver, one of the best shooters in NBA history. So when you've got those guys plus a bench that's full of young, unproven guys, and that can be that they're questionable, but that can also mean that they can – any one of these guys could step up. Adrian Payne, Dennis Schroeder, all these guys can step up and have big years and surprise people. They've got solid depth really at every position. They've got Peril Antich, who was really underrated last year. They've got so many things that they can do on this team. They're going to be able to hit you in so many ways. And the biggest thing, they have – all of their guys are smart, all of them. I mean, all of their main component guys are exceptional high basketball IQ guys. They don't make mistakes. So I really think if they get into a groove and the system is able to augment their individual skill sets, there's a great chance that this team could win, you know, close to 50, if not 50, and really lock up the 3 seed in the Eastern Conference. That wouldn't shock me at all.
Wouldn't shock me either. You know, they also picked up – they had a very good offseason. They picked up Cephalosha. Kent Bazemore is going to be a very good signing. He played really well last season, and I like this him being behind Kyle Korver a lot. And John Jenkins is – he hasn't really even had a chance to bust out. But you're right. This is a solid team. I like them. What about Damari Carroll, though? Is he the wild card in this starting five, you think?
We'll have to see. I've been kind of interested to watch because it's almost like they haven't been able to justify not putting him in the starting position and playing him heavy minutes. It's like, you know, Damari Carroll was a guy that he was not getting minutes in Memphis. And when I talked to him a couple of years ago, and he wasn't getting any minutes at all. And he was so depressed. And you could tell, like he just didn't know where his career was going. And he wound up getting traded, and then he didn't play. And then he found his way to Utah, and he played a little bit, and he found his way into a couple of minutes and started to really show something, and then Atlanta gave him a serious opportunity. I look at Damari Carroll kind of the same way I look at Al-Farouq Aminu, with these really athletic, talented defenders. They're almost what you would call pure defenders. Carroll's got a little bit of offensive game, but not a whole lot. But he's going to have a real opportunity. I think he fits a need for them in that they don't have a lot of wings that have great length and athleticism. Mike Scott's more of a four. They've got some, you know, Kyle Korver actually is an underrated defender, but he's definitely not a lockdown guy. So I think that Carroll's going to have a good opportunity to play a significant role. And that again, I think is what this comes back to is Atlanta's building a team that relies on guys knowing what they do well and focusing on it. So I think that that's going to be really maybe the biggest part of how he does this season is whether he stays in his lane and is able to contribute in the ways that he needs to while not being an offensive zero.
That's a good observation, too. Now, I'm going to play devil's advocate with the Hawks here a little bit. Last season, when Al Horford went down, pretty much so did their season. God forbid, if something happens to him, where do you see this Hawks team then?
Without Horford?
Yeah.
He's had injuries before. Yeah. You know, if he goes down, they're going to be pretty much where they were last year. Unless Adrian Payne is able to make a significant adjustment and get used to a complicated system. Which a couple of guys have told me are not exactly his strength in terms of what he does. It's been a concern for him is his ability to pick up a system. I can't really see them being able to maintain a top seed. Without Al Horford, are the Hawks better than the Knicks? I still think so, but it would be kind of a battle. I think that that's when things would get tough. They'd be in a real scrap, I think, for the 8th seed if Horford goes down.
No one is better than the Knicks.
Sure.
This is my Homer talking. This is the Homer in me talking. Okay, I agree with you. I think the Hawks are a really good team. I like what you said earlier, though, about the chemistry issue and how they could rally behind the unfortunate incidents of the summer. It should be interesting all the same. Now, we've got the Portland Trailblazers. We do a weekly report with Dave Deckard from Blazers Edge. A lot of people wanted your opinion about this basketball team, and now with Kevin Durant out, where do you see Portland finishing up this year?
They got a window. I hope they jump on it. They got a window to take the division, but they're going to have to absolutely crush it in the first month of the season and build an even bigger gap than they had last year. Like they've got to have a huge lead on the Thunder in order to hold off and win that division, but it would be massive for them. If they're able to get home court advantage, it would be huge. The question with them comes down to two things. Are they going to be able to sustain the level of offense and the level of spacing and brilliance that they had last year? And our team's not going to be able to scout them out and figure out, because that's the thing is once the book gets out on your system, it gets harder and harder to keep up the offensive efficiency. Will they be able to keep that up? And then on the flip side, they don't have guys on their team that you necessarily look at and go, wow, those are bad defenders. They just don't. Like Damian Lillard's young, but he's willing. Like Lillard's a better defender than Kyrie Irving because he's a willing defender. LaMarcus Aldridge isn't a good defender, but he's a willing defender. Wes Matthews is a good individual defender. Nicholas Batum is a good individual defender, even though he's a little overrated. And Robin Lopez is a good individual defender and rim protector. So the question is, why is it with all those guys? All those guys that with none of them being really a flaming negative on defense, was their defense so bad? Why were they so terrible on that end? And you can point at it and say, well, it's the depth, it's the bench. You can say, well, it's the system. You could say it's them getting used to one another. There's a lot of ways that you can look at this. And all of those things point to the idea that another year together and they'll improve. And if they naturally improve because of continuity, and because of getting to know one another and the system better, there's a great chance that this team is going to absolutely thrive. If they can clear it, they only have to be really decent at defense, and they're going to be, you know, a top four team in the Western Conference, and nobody wants to go to the Rose Garden for a 7-game series. Like, nobody wants to go down that road. And if that's the situation, they're going to have a really great chance to advance and maybe make a run at the Western Conference Finals. Like, you just don't know. Like, that's how tough the West is crazy things can happen. And if they can, especially if they can find a way to pull into, like, if they're the two and another team's the three, like the Mavericks or Clippers and the Thunder somehow fall to four and they don't have to go to San Antonio, there's no reason Portland can't go to the Western Conference Finals. Now, on the flip side, the bench is still a disaster. I like all their young talent, but it takes a while for those guys to get up to speed, and you're asking them to do a lot on the defensive end. I have questions about whether or not LaMarcus Aldridge is going to have a sustainable year in terms of from last year to this year. He was so great, and I've loved LaMarcus since he was drafted. I've always been mad that it was always like, oh, Brandon Roy, oh, Greg Oden. I was sitting there screaming. I'm like, are y'all watching LaMarcus Aldridge? Because he's really good. But Aldridge relies on an inefficient shot, which is the contested two-point shot. And while there's all this talk about how LaMarcus Aldridge proves that you don't have to shoot threes, well, if you look at his actual points per shot and the actual efficiency metric, yeah, you're still losing out on this end of the proposition. They had a great series against Houston, and Houston was drunk that entire series, much as they were for most of the year. But there is a serious question of, are they going to be able to sustain? I have a lot of the same questions about the Blazers that I do about the Suns in this regard. How often do you see guys have back-to-back career years? That's a real question, because that's how good they have to be. They have to have everybody have not only as good a season as last year, but a better one, and they've got to improve on defense. That's a lot to ask of this Portland team. It's one of the reasons that if you're looking at a candidate to fall back in the West just a little bit, I think you have to look at Portland.
Great stuff today. That's an excellent analogy. I really appreciate it. Matt, thanks so much for being on the show with me.
Hey, anytime, Phil. Appreciate it.
All right, that was Matt Moore. You can find him at CBSSports.com or at HardwoodParoxysms.com. You can find all the links in the show notes. Coming up next, Dave Deckard and I will talk Portland Trail Blazers hoops, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
Hi, we're all Forget, and you're listening to Phil Nason Show.
Riveting talk radio.
Everybody get up. People cannot get away from the internet.
Well,
now.
I think, and it probably comes from porn as well. You
yeah.
Know what I mean, that's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Dog radio. Bend over, baby. That was great.
FanDuel and the Phil Nason Show have partnered to bring you a 100% signing bonus up to $200 when you play fantasy sports at FanDuel. For your 100% signing bonus, please use the promo code PhillyFlash and win some cash with a flash playing fantasy sports at FanDuel today.
Central Portugal's only English-speaking information station, this is Epics Radio. Listen online, www.epicsradio.com.
If you like baseball, you should be checking out baseballpodcasts.net. It's one of the best places you can go on the internet to listen to independent baseball talk shows 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on our radio player that can be heard around the world. So won't you tune in and give us a listen at baseballpodcast.net. You can also listen to the great Phil Nason Show here. See you there at baseballpodcast.net.
Brewtown Sports is your source for Brewers news and notes. Join Mr. Brewtown as he keeps you up to date on all the happenings of your Milwaukee Brewers and Major League Baseball. Follow the show on Facebook and Twitter, Brewtown Sports. Listen 24/7 at brewtownsports.podomatic.com.
Hi, this is Phil Nason from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nason Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
And now,
Shut the hell up.
Back to the Phil Nason Show.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. We're wrapping up an amazing day of NBA basketball talk. And joining me now from BlazersEdge.com, please welcome Dave Decker to the Phil Nason Show. Dave, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Doing just great, Phil. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm enjoying myself. Talking NBA basketball all day, it's a nice thing. It really is. Really is. Matt Moore was on the show earlier, and we talked Blazers hoops. So you folks out in Portland, you're going to enjoy that conversation. Kevin Durant out for who knows how long, 20 to 30 games. How does that affect the Blazers, and what do you think is going to happen with the Thunder?
Well, it'll be interesting to see. It seems like every year Oklahoma City goes through something. Usually it's Russell Westbrook. That's what it has been. But when that happens, they usually find a way to step up. Now, it's a little different having Durant out, but still, this gives Westbrook more freedom to be the uninhibited star, so to speak, that he always wanted to be. It'll be interesting to see if he can pick it up. And, Serge Ibaka, always underrated, and he's capable of putting some numbers up. So obviously the pressure will fall on those guys. I don't expect the Thunder to run away with the record that they'd have with Durant, obviously, but it's not necessarily the end of the world for them. Depends on how long he's out, how well he recovers, you know, what he feels like when he gets back. And I think they've still got a good shot to be a good team, obviously, maybe even an elite team. But, you know, it's not good news. But it's not a disaster. It's just an injury.
Yeah, you're right. Now, I wanted to ask you, too, I can't remember the last time a team started their season without their MVP, unless they retired.
Well, I mean, some of them have, like, chronic injuries, like, you know, Derrick Rose and what have you. So it happens, but you're right. It's kind of rare for a person of that magnitude. I mean, LeBron James and Kevin Durant are in a category by themselves. I suppose Kobe Bryant has been in that category, and obviously he got severely injured, but he's old enough to where his numbers are starting to be a little more plastic, lead to a few less wins. So he's not quite in the same breath as those two. So it's certainly a major loss for the league as far as one of the two or three best players in the universe went down. That's no fun.
Nope, it sure isn't. And believe me, commentating on it hasn't been much fun either because I've been getting killed because I don't think the Thunder are going to win 50 games this season.
That would be a shock. I mean, the West is tough, obviously, but they have been good for long enough now that they've overcome some things. And I would be shocked to see them, you know. Okay, well, we'll put an asterisk on that. The West could be good enough that where a lot of teams end up in the 40s. And if Durant's injury lasts long enough, sure, the Thunder could end up one of those. But let's put it this way. I don't think they end up appreciably worse than everybody else. They'll be worse than they were expected to be as one of the top two teams in the West. But they won't drop so far that you go, oh my gosh, I can't believe it, the Thunder are done.
That's fair enough. You know what? That's fair enough. It should be interesting to see. We'll have to wait and see. But now it's time to talk a little Blazers. Now, what do the Blazers need to do? This is a very good opportunity for the Portland Trail Blazers, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, and you got to take advantage of it, too. One of the things the Blazers need to develop is a killer instinct. I think Damian Lillard has some of it naturally. It's just in his makeup. But other than that, the team has kind of been cool, calm, professional, kind of those cool kids in the corner. And they need to develop more of a jump on top of you and take advantage while you're down and never let you get back up again mentality. And that's part of becoming a real veteran winning team. Hey, the Showtime Lakers had cachet too. They were the coolest team around, but they'd stomp you. I mean, they would not let you get a win. And the Blazers need to do that too, to the extent that they're able. So if the Thunder's down, you know, boo-hoo, sad for them. Wish they were healthy. But since they're down, we might as well win and go out and get every game that you can.
You know, the one thing that I think they have to guard against is that slump they had. Because last year they came out just crushing everybody, and then they kind of backed off. And I think it goes back to what you said about killer instinct. How does a team develop that, then, you think?
Well, hopefully getting in the playoffs and getting a taste of what real winning feels like will spur them to greater effort and an understanding of what they have to do, because they retained that happy feeling pretty much through their first round victory with Houston. I think Houston brought something out in them, a little chutzpah or what have you, to where they just wanted to beat the Rockets. They were going to do that, and they got their backs up and they did it. But after that, they got back in the happy zone again. It's like, wow, it's great. We're in the second round. We exceeded expectations. And San Antonio handed in their lunch. So, you know, hopefully that will teach them that in order to really win, in order to go as far as they want to, they can't get happy. They just have to get more determined.
That's a good answer, and that's exactly correct. You would think, though, that that big win over Houston will propel this team to greater heights for this year. I think it will. I'm very high on the Portland Trailblazers this year.
Well, I think a lot of people are. They're the sexy pick right now because they exceeded expectations last year, because Damian Lillard is terribly charismatic and has blossomed on the national stage. They're an easy team to like right now. They're kind of that hot team, that cute girl at the dance. But if they don't back it up with wins, that's all going to disappear very quickly. And the truth is, the West is still pretty much packed in those middle zones. And there are a lot of teams that could be very good that people aren't talking about. I think people have forgotten Golden State a little bit. You know, Dallas might have gotten better. Houston it might have gotten a little worse, but they're still no, you know, patsies. They're ready to go. So there are a lot of teams in there that could steal Portland's thunder if the Blazers don't come out determined. They better not still be happy about how they did last year while they're entering this year. Otherwise, it's going to be a rough start to the season.
You know, I think you're right, too. And one thing that's encouraging is Chris Kaman and Steve Blake have signed with the team, and they're already demonstrating how much they're going to help the Blazers, right?
Kaman especially. And I think you see a security at center now that hasn't been there. Obviously, Robin Lopez provided a lot of that last year because it was totally absent in years prior. And then Kaman looks like he'll be a decent backup. Now, he's not going to change the way the Blazers play, but he does have the ability to do most of what Lopez does. He takes up a little bit of space in the paint, maybe not quite as much as Lopez, but good enough. He adds a little face-up jumper that Lopez doesn't have quite as well. And otherwise, he's just good to go, solid in the middle, not going to hurt you. And that's about what the Blazers need. So he looks like he'll fit in really well. Blake, I think the jury's still out on a little bit. He's still finding his way. And, of course, there are a lot more demands on a point guard than there are on the center, at least in Portland's system. So, you know, we'll see on him. It'll be interesting to see whether he gets minutes or whether a guy like CJ McCollum or even Will Barton can eat into a few of those. I think, frankly, the Blazers might prefer the latter a little bit, that if they can have one of their young guys catch fire, they're going to ride him. But Blake is a good fallback position and he'll do fine. You never have to worry about him. It's just he's pretty much holding down the fort until, of course, Lillard and the starters get back in, and that's about all you expect of them.
You know, I think you're right, but it's encouraging because last year the bench was like, well, if I say awful, I guess it's probably correct. They look a lot better. I know this is preseason, but they seem to look a little more experienced, a little more, they have played with a little more confidence. Am I missing something?
No, I think part of it is just those young guys. Will Barton was all over the court 2 years ago, and then last year he calmed down a little bit, but still was semi-unreliable. Towards the end of the season, he got better. Now he looks like he's comfortable. CJ McCollum, too. He didn't go through training camp last year, and that's really important. He just got thrown to the wolves, basically, and so he didn't look that great. But he has summer camp now, or summer league under his belt. He has a training camp that he's getting under his belt, and he just looks like he understands the system a little bit more. Now, where they're both still exposed is defensively. There's some shenanigans going on there still, which may limit their minutes. But basically, I think those two certainly look more confident than they did last season, and it makes a difference.
It does. It really does. And I'm on the Trailblazers bandwagon big time. What about the games thus far? Like I said, it's preseason. I know this, but what pluses besides the bench can we take away from what we've seen so far?
Well, it's been kind of up and down. I think obviously Kamen is the biggest one. I think just the continuity among the starters. They look relaxed. They look comfortable in their own skins. They're starting to get that look of a veteran team. They don't have many questions about each other, I don't think, and no questions or relatively few questions to answer internally compared to past years. This is the first year in more than a decade that there's not been a change in the starting lineup coming into the season. That has not happened for the Blazers. So they look like their questions are more about how to beat the opponent than how to get together themselves, which I think is a plus. So that's a nice development. But other than that, off of three games, mostly you're looking at those young players, the bench players, see who's going to develop individually. The starters already had those questions answered. So I'm a little skeptical about what we're taking away from the early going. We're really going to have to wait for the preseason to see whether, or I'm sorry, for the regular season to see whether this development is real.
Yeah, I think you're right. But I'm excited, though, because it's nice to see that at least the bench, and Terry Stotts is using the bench a lot in this preseason, because that's the riddle he needs to solve, right?
Yeah, and it's his MO. I mean, he uses the preseason to work his way into the season, not as much, I think, as a trying ground or proving ground. I think he teaches probably in practice, and then uses those games to kind of get people comfortable on the court. So, you know, Portland's preseason history under Stotts has been sketchy, but that's okay. It doesn't matter. These aren't real games, and I think that's exactly how he treats them.
You're right. I agree with you, too. Now, that brings me to a question a listener had, and this listener wanted to know if you think the preseason lasts too long.
Well, I think everything in the NBA lasts too long. I mean, the playoffs are 2 months. The preseason is, you know, 2-3 weeks. It's just this is the NBA's MO. They draw out everything. Personally, I could do with fewer preseason games. I think 3 or 4 is sufficient. And then just give the guys more time to practice internally or start the season sooner so you spread out the games a little bit more. I wouldn't see a problem with starting the season in mid-October instead of at the end of October. And I think that would ease up on back-to-backs and what have you. So, yeah, I would say there are probably too many games, but I'm not surprised by that.
Yeah, I think there's too many, too. It's just too long and drawn out, and you got all these games that mean nothing, and people are already jumping on bandwagons before they should. Preseason's kind of deceiving, but a lot of these good coaches, like Terry Stotts, use it the right way. We get to see their bench. We get to see what he's trying to do, and that's nice. If there's a wild card to make this basketball team, who's it going to be?
To make this basketball team? To make the roster?
To make the roster.
Yeah, that's not going to happen, I don't think. I don't think any of the guys are good enough. You have Darius Morris, Deonte Garrett still left. They cut James Sutherland the other day. So they could carry a third point guard, but I believe that they're going to have McCollum or Barton fill that role anyway. And they're going to consider it probably a waste of money to cut their 15th guy, who at this point is Victor Claver, I would guess. Why would they want to pay him $1.3 million or whatever and then pay another guy's salary as well when that other guy is going to be, in essence, the fourth point guard on the roster? Unless somebody really tickles their fancy somehow, I don't see that happening. It's just, you know, yeah, it's not a lot of money, but it's still money, and they'll choose to keep it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm still thinking that the Blazers are going to win 55 games this year.
That would be fantastic. You should go. We've been talking about the Las Vegas overs and unders on the site a lot, and they have it pegged at either 48.5 or 49 wins. So you would definitely want to go and put some money on the over, because I think people would yet be surprised. Look, there's a kind of a cloud of maybe hanging over this team. Everybody says full marks for last season. You did great, but can you do it again? I'm not sure. And I think until the Blazers do it again, those questions will remain, and people will underestimate probably or go on the low side of the estimate in terms of how they'll perform this year.
I say Western Conference Finals. That's what I say. Anyway, great stuff today. Dave, thanks for being on the show with me.
Absolutely, and I hope your predictions come true.
And sometimes they do. That was Dave Deckard. You can find him over at BlazersEdge.com, and that's going to wrap it up for today's show. I want to thank all the guys for making this an amazing NBA day. Until next time, y'all take care of yourselves. Be good, and most importantly...
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you, my father thanks you, my sister thanks you, and I thank you.